I need to take a break. Some very interesting books here at the Southwest Neighborhood Library, but that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. This is Kenosha, which, as you know, where I was born. Anyway, I shall continue my wandering about here, and our most interesting mystery will begin in just a few minutes.
And good morning. I'm Steve Brown, co-executive producer of the WGTD Radio Theater, welcoming you to show number 131 as we continue our 18th season. We are broadcasting live from the Kenosha Southwest Neighborhood Library right here in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And today we present The Cane's Shadow, The Library Mystery. This original story was written by me, Steve Brown, and is directed by Anne Marie Schmidt. Let me take this time to say that today's broadcast is in memory of Michael Ostrup, who passed away back in February of this year. Mike and I created the Brown Ostrup Performing Arts Foundation over 13 years ago. We both wrote and produced the WGTD Radio Theater broadcast for 18 years, and Mike will be greatly missed by all of us who had the honor to work with him. As a side note, our radio theater productions have won 30 awards from both the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and nationally from the National Audio Theater Festivals. Support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Brown Ostrup Performing Arts Foundation, located in Salem, Wisconsin, and can be found on the web at brownostrupfoundation.org. And also from the Kenosha Public Libraries and their many locations in Kenosha. Their website is mykpl.info. And now, The Cane's Shadow, The Library Mystery.
Hello again. I'd like to introduce you to Miss Louise Manchester, who is the library director here. And she will give you some information about me and how my life started here in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Thank you, Mr. Wells. 6116 7th Avenue, Kenosha, Wisconsin, in the Library Park area. That was Mr. Wells' home here in Kenosha. And just to keep the story true and most accurate, he wasn't a Kenosha resident for long, relocating to Chicago at age 4 upon his parents' separation. After an affluent childhood marred by his parents' untimely deaths, he finally found a true home at the Todd School for Boys in Woodstock, Illinois, where his prodigious talents were nurtured and his illustrious career launched.
Well, good morning, Louise.
Oh, good morning to you, Helen. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce Miss Helen Thompson, who is the editor of the Kenosha Gazette.
As always, thank you, Louise. The Gazette is always proud and honored to reminisce about Kenosha's very own Orson Welles.
Here we go again.
Now, Orson, please let me very briefly tell our audience about your days at the Todd School.
If you must, go ahead.
Orson was only 11 when he started at Todd. Here was a boy who could have a discussion about China, Europe, Toulouse-Lautrec, Mozart, Hugo, Voltaire, Shakespeare, and many, many others. As you might guess, he was not well-liked by some of the students and teachers, but he always performed in many of the plays at Todd School, and he loved to read, and I do mean love to read so many of the books in the school library. And then, of course, he enjoyed mathematics and working with numbers, lots of numbers and calculations.
Helen, that is a wonderful segue to get me back to our mystery story today.
Oh, why, of course, Orson. I will chat with you a bit later.
Most excellent. And yes, I do love to read, as well as many different gyrations with numbers and letters. In fact, 823.8. Yes, here they are. So many books written by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Sherlock Holmes, the stories with Agatha Christie stories are among my most treasured. They always have been, and that tells me something might be hidden in one of these mystery books. That might be very dangerous.
Mr. Wells, I know you love Sherlock Holmes stories and those numbers, but will you move the story along, won't you please? We still have so much to tell the audience today about the library mystery.
Yes, Jeanette, my most talented and appreciated administrative assistant. You do know how to keep me on track. I do think I have already hinted about the mystery and something potentially dangerous. Numbers, letters, sounds a lot like ciphertext. So, if you threw 26 pieces of paper into a hat, each with a letter of an alphabet written on it, drew them out one at a time, and put them side by side under a normal alphabet.
Yes, sounds exactly like, or should I say, looks exactly like, Q-W-E-R-T-Y code.
You can construct a secret message from that type of code. Every time you see an I, you would substitute the O beneath and so on for the other characters.
Mr. Wells, it's so great to be here in Kenosha at this library. 823.8. Melville Dewey. Yes, the Dewey Decimal System. Such a wonderful and talented man. Those numbers, they might mean something more than just how books are cataloged.
Did I hear someone talking about the Dewey Decimal System and those numbers?
Yes, and you are?
Some people just call me Barb, but I am Barbara Underwood, one of the librarians here. Now, about Sherlock and Dr. Watson, and I do want to hear more about such codes.
Oh, brother. Or should I say, oh, sister. Where is this mystery story leading us now? Something about numbers? It is almost like trying to break the Enigma code used by the Germans in World War II.
You are quite correct, Mr. Wells. And if I may say, this library mystery might just be all about numbers and letters. You mentioned the Enigma code.
Yes, I did. And what more can you tell us about that?
The Enigma machine based its cipher capabilities on a series of wire-rotored wheels and a plug board. Through a web of internal wiring, each of the 26 input contacts on the rotor were connected to a different output contact. The writing connection of one rotor differed from the connections on any other rotor.
I should have asked you for a simpler description of the Enigma.
How about this, which is far simpler than flying over to London and visiting Bletchley Park where the German code was broken.
Sounds okay to me.
Each time a letter is pressed, the right wheel moves on one of its 26 places. Once during every 26 moves at the turnover position on the right wheel, the middle wheel will also move on one place.
Simple, huh? Right.
Mr. Wells, why don't we give Mrs. Underwood a chance to tell us why Sherlock Holmes is involved in our mystery story and how this library classifies books?
Yes, you are so correct. And I won't even chime in with my famous, "Hello, I'm Orson Welles."
Yes, yes, we do know who you are. So, Mrs. Underwood, do you think you were going to tell us about Sherlock Holmes, correct?
Yes, you are correct. Silver Blaze, a fascinating story.
Okay, Barb, how is this related to our mystery? Oh, and by the way, Mr. Wells, I have to leave so I can do some investigative work for you. Yeah.
Okay, Jeanette, we'll see you a bit later. As you were saying, Mrs. Underwood,
Mr. Wells, this book I am holding might be one of use to you in perhaps solving the mystery.
Very interesting. The Memoirs of Sherlock Holmes. Hello again, Mrs. Manchester. Or shall I call you Madam Library Director?
Well, actually, Louise is fine. Anyway, I get a bit nervous when Barb gets locked into anything that has to do with Sherlock Holmes. Oh, and you can add Agatha Christie to that list, as well as numbers and cryptic codes.
823.8. Okay, great. Here it is on the bookshelf. And here is a wonderful Sherlock Holmes book, all about his memoirs.
What a wonderful collection of stories.
Mr. Wells, please meet Marty Dansworth, who is a detective with the local police department.
Nice to meet you, detective.
Likewise, Mr. Wells. By the way, love your movies and your most famous wine commercial.
Oh, yes. Paul Masson will sell no wine before it's time. One of my all-time favorites as well.
The memoirs of Sherlock Holmes, huh? Wonderful stories. Especially Silver Blaze. It's quite alive with its storyline.
Indeed it is. Let's see. Let me find it. Oh, yes. Here it is, right in the beginning. I am afraid, Watson, that I shall have to go, said Holmes, as we sat down together to our breakfast one morning. Go? Where to? Dr. Watson, in his narration, says, to Dartmoor, to King's Pyland. I was not surprised. Indeed, my only wonder was
that he had not already been mixed up in this extraordinary case, which was the one topic of conversation through the length and breadth of England. For a whole day, Sherlock had rambled about the room with his chin upon his chest and his brows knitted, charging and recharging his pipe with the strongest black tobacco, and absolutely deaf to any of my questions or remarks. Fresh editions of every paper had been sent up by our newsagent, only to be glanced over and tossed down into a corner.
Watson, are you in our apartment?
Why, yes, of course I am, Holmes.
There you are. But truthfully, where are we? Quite confusing.
Confusing? I dare say not. We are in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Someone was reading lines from Silver Blaze in my memoirs book. That must be part of this whole mystery in the library. And numbers.
Why, yes, I heard those same lines being read, and I had to join him in the reading. And what about those numbers? I would think that most of us are quite familiar with this type of cipher. It's the classic A equals 1, B equals 2, C equals 3 code you did at school, or a book code where a sequence of numbers corresponds to the words on a page.
There you have it. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. John Hamish Watson, together again. Well, it's back to Baker Street. Back to London, where high adventure awaits all who would seek it. In a horse-drawn cab or under a gas lamp in an Inverness cape. Right now, we pay tribute to the most wonderful member of that most wonderful world, two gentlemen who never lived and who will never die, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. And I do believe they will be most accommodating in helping us to solve this most provocative, the library mystery.
My name is Watson, John Watson. I am a doctor. It was in the year 1880 that Holmes and I were introduced by a mutual acquaintance. At the time, we were both looking for a lodging that would suit our moderate means. This we found on the second floor of a house at 221B Baker Street. It was owned by Mrs. Hudson, and it was during the years that we occupied these chambers together that Holmes established his unique international reputation as a consulting detective.
Did I correctly hear my name mentioned?
Yes, you did, Mrs. Hudson.
So, Dr. Watson, what is the story you're telling our audience this morning?
Oh, it's another episode of The Cane Shadow, and it's the library mystery. As many of us know, Sherlock Holmes is famously associated with deduction, but actually, he followed a process of abductive reasoning before he reached the stage of deductive reasoning. Abductive reasoning is essentially forming a conclusion from the known information. Like, for instance, a series of numbers and what they mean. Once you eliminate the impossible whatever remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth. A series of numbers and letters.
Watson, I'd better jump into this conversation, as you and Mrs. Hudson always seem to get so very carried away with your stories. And do not forget this. Once you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth.
Why, of course, Holmes. And do not be surprised if that Cane Shadow man intertwines his own iteration of the story.
And as we all know, the Cane Shadow is quite capable of eliminating the impossible and then determining the truth.
We can all certainly expect Mr. Wells as the Cane Shadow to do first.
Indeed. I am so very efficient in doing such things, Mrs. Hudson. So, Sherlock, let me ask you this quintessential question. Are we going to have the displeasure of meeting with and having to deal with Professor Moriarty?
I'm not sure about that. But you did tell me over breakfast the other day in Kenosha at that most delightful Frank's Diner that we would probably be coming into contact with your local gangster in town, Johnny the Hammer Thompson?
Yes, you are quite correct. He is well known for his ability to get away with whatever crimes he might be committing.
Fascinating, quite fascinating.
Orson, is the Hammer Thompson related to that newspaper editor, Helen Thompson?
Helen
I'm just wondering, you know?
He is always having to tell that the answer to that question is no. Absolutely not.
Orson, that is a wonderful and most anticipated segue to let London's very own Inspector Lestrade into this story.
This is a most interesting and unusual story today. Something about a library mystery and numbers and letters. So, I have to ask the question, was someone killed or was there some very valuable stolen from the library? Or better yet, was something hidden here in the library that could threaten national security, like numbers and letters? And please don't let Holmes hear me say this, but this almost sounds like an Agatha Christie mystery story.
I did hear that. But anyway, Inspector Lestrade, just who was he? Who was Lestrade? I do think that Miss Yvonne Patterson, crime reporter for the Kenosha Gazette, can shed some light on who Lestrade is. And maybe even let us know more about the Hammer. Orson, what do you think?
I agree 100%. There's no time like the present to let Mrs. Patterson share her most deepest thoughts on Lestrade.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Wells. I'd love to. Inspector Lestrade, he is the most famous detective ever to walk the corridors of Scotland Yard. We do not know his first name, only his initial G. Dr. Watson described Lestrade unflatteringly as sallow, rat-faced, and dark-eyed, and whom Holmes saw as quick and energetic, but wholly conventional, lacking in imagination and normally out of his depth, the best of a bad lot who had reached the top in the police force by bulldog tenacity.
Lestrade here again. Well, that description of who I am was certainly not very positive. And I would expect Johnny the Hammer Thompson might not like my bulldog tenacity.
Yeah, people call me the Hammer. And yeah, that sound you just heard was my hammer. I always carry one wherever I go. In case you were wondering, I'm just roaming around this library today, relaxing and hoping to find something my good friend Pauline McDermott told me all about. You all know her as Miss Pauline. She owns the Fuzzy Peach Club right here in downtown Kenosha, down near the lakefront.
Johnny, let me introduce myself to you. My name is Orson Welles.
Yeah, I know who you are. Orson Welles, the big shot from Hollywood. And yeah, I know you were born right here in Kenosha. Big crackling deal.
Why, thank you for such kind words.
What you mean, kind words? I don't think so. It's that whole Kane Shadow thing that I don't get.
So what are we looking for here in the library?
I'm just roaming around, trying to find a good read. Maybe I'll decide on 7 books to check out.
Anything else?
Nah, sort of bored with things now that Labor Day is over.
Bored, huh?
Yeah, but not anymore. Here's my good friend Pauline.
Johnny, what are you doing in the library on Saturday morning? I think you'd be much happier at my club and tavern, the Fuzzy Peach.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Of course I'm right. I usually am. Johnny, by the way, did I see you chit-chatting with Orson Welles?
Yeah, nothing important. You know how those stuffy and highbrow Hollywood types are?
I sure do. Almost as bad as our local politicians. Always spouting off about things I don't care about.
Mrs. McDermott, how are you on this lovely September morning?
Just checking out the library, looking for something good mystery to read.
Did I hear someone mention a mystery? By the way, I was just at the cafe at the Stella and had a delightful cup of English breakfast tea and an apple croissant when I overheard someone talking about Agatha Christie and her Miss Marple mystery called The Body in the Library.
Mr. Holmes, as you know, my job as senior librarian here is to always be a step ahead of what a patron might be looking for.
Oh, that sounds like quite an interesting and creative job that you have here.
Indeed it does, Holmes. Almost like our wonderful London library right in the heart of St. James Square.
Dr. Watson, I have been there several times during my visits to London and to No. 10 Downing Street to have lunch with the Prime Minister.
Fascinating. My brother Mycroft, who always states that he is the British government, would be envious of your travels. And Mycroft would not hesitate to tell you that he always has lunch with the PM at least once a month.
Mr. Wells, as you know, that book you selected about Mr. Holmes was at 823.8 on our bookshelf. But please, don't forget about 823.91.
Hmm. Yeah, really.
I know whose book, whose books are there.
And who are you, madam?
Eileen O'Neill. I live just down the block from the library.
Well, are you going to tell us whose books are at that particular Dewey Decimal System number?
I'm sure she will. That's her nature.
Why do you say that?
She is what we call a very nosy neighbor.
Well, that's sort of rude to call me nosy. I'm just someone who likes to know what's going on each and every minute. That's just who I am. My daddy always said you should be aware of everything.
Miss O'Neill, our broadcast director, Anne-Marie Schmidt, has given me a note to try to move this mystery story along. So that is what I am going to do.
Okay, I understand the need to do that. Mother always said the same thing to me.
So, what's the significance about 823.91?
Agatha Christie. And these two interesting facts always come to mind. And, Mr. Wells, I shall be brief.
Yes, of course.
The first ever story that she wrote when she was younger was called The House of Beauty. And she wrote it to stave off boredom while she was in bed recovering from influenza. And secondly, she wrote her first detective novel, The Mysterious Affairs at Stiles, after a bet with her sister, Madge.
Thank you, Miss O'Neill. And now, a short reading from Agatha Christie's book, The Body in the Library. Miss Marple's telephone rang when she was dressing. The sound of it rattled her a little.
It was an unusual hour for her telephone to ring. So well ordered was her prim spinster's life that unforeseen telephone calls were a source of vivid conjecture. Good morning. This is Agatha Christie, and I am so glad to be able to join you this morning. I always love reading my mysteries out loud. Now, back to our story. Dear me, said Miss Marple, surveying the ringing instrument with perplexity. I wonder who that could be. 9 o'clock to 9:30 was the recognized time for the village to make friendly calls to neighbors. Too early even for a telegram, since the post office did not open until 8. It must be, Miss Marple decided, a wrong number. Having decided this, she advanced to the impatient instrument and quelled its clamor by picking up the receiver. Yes, she said. Is that you, Jane? Miss Marple was very surprised. Yes, it's Jane. You're up very early, Dolly. Mrs. Bantry's voice became breathless and agitated over the wires. The most awful thing has happened. Oh, my dear. We've just found a body in the library. For a moment, Miss Marple thought her friend had gone mad. You found a what? I know. One doesn't believe it, does one? I mean, I thought they only happened in books. I had to argue for hours with Arthur this morning before he'd even go down and see. Miss Marple tried to collect herself. She demanded breathlessly, But whose body is it? It's a blonde. A what? A blonde. A beautiful blonde. My books again. None of us had ever seen her before. She's just lying there in the library, dead. That's why you've got to come up at once. You want me to come up? Yes, I'm sending the car down for you, Miss Marple said doubtfully. Of course, dear, if you think I can be of any comfort to you. Oh, I don't want comfort, but you're so good at bodies. Oh, no, indeed. My little successes have been mostly theoretical. But you're very good at murders. She's been murdered, you see, strangled. What I feel is that if one has got to have a murder happening in one's house, one might as well enjoy it, if you know what I mean. That's why I want you to come and help me find out who did it and unravel the mystery and all that. It really is rather thrilling, isn't it? Agatha here again. I must leave you now. This is Kathy Garber. We continue with the library mystery, and who knows, but we might even discover that this mystery could be a family affair.
Wow, how wonderful to hear about the body in the library. Agatha Christie has always been one of my favorite mystery writers.
Lawson, I most definitely agree with you.
As do I.
Well, well, a politician in our midst. Nice to see you again, Mr. Yarborough. So, how is the whole local political scene treating you as one of Kenosha's aldermen?
Please, Orson, call me Jerry. As an elected official, I deal with the political world each and every day.
I'm sure you do.
Mr. Wells, I'm back from doing some investigative work for you.
So glad you are back with us.
Yes, by all means. Nice to see you again, Jeanette. So, Mr. Wells, anything new about the library mystery?
Jerry, the mystery boils down to this. Numbers. A series of numbers that might correspond to letters. Who knows?
Let me share a few thoughts. I read about this when I visited Bletchley Park, outside of London.
Yes, of course. That is where the German Enigma machine code was broken back in World War II.
Yes, quite true. Let me share these thoughts. If the way that the clue is encoded isn't fairly obvious with a bit of trial and error deduction, then you also have to think about how you will incorporate the way to encode it into the mystery.
Yes, and let me add this. One option is to make a few characters a part of a, let's say, secret society, and say on their character sheet they sometimes communicate with one another using a particular form of encryption.
That is very true. by the way, I'm not sure you know this, but I served in the U.S. Navy for 7 years, specializing in military intelligence. And I'm still in the Naval Reserve.
Orson, allow me to respond to Mr. Yarbrough, if I may.
Why, of course, Sherlock.
Mr. Yarbrough, your service is most appreciated. I would suspect that you also dealt with secret codes and encryption, numbers and letters.
Yes, indeed I did. I learned that there are countless other ways to encode clues as parts of letters, secret notes.
That is exactly what I was thinking.
Holmes, in my years as a medical doctor, I have always been fascinated by how encryption in the secret world of espionage relates in many ways to the world of medicine.
Oh, quite true, Watson. And as you know, I also believe it's elementary, my good friend and doctor.
Elementary. Indeed it is.
Numbers, secret codes. That's why we are in this particular area of the library. 823.8 and 823.91. Yes, we do need to be aware of red herrings, and also remember that part of the abductive reasoning process is to eliminate these based on the known evidence and not on conjecture. When the solution is revealed, it needs to be acceptable to those who have invested their time in the game. Try to avoid giving too much weight to convenient solutions.
As an elected official, I seldom find it easy or even practical to merely wait for convenient solutions.
I think Inspector Lestrade would most definitely agree with you.
Did I hear my name uttered by the most famous and dedicated Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, you did.
Most excellent. Holmes, I decided to work with one of the local constables. Or should I say, detective.
You mean Kenosha Detective Dansworth?
Yes, that's him.
Detective Dansworth, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Wells. Just so you know, I've been quite aware of all this chit-chat about numbers, letters, and secret codes.
Oh, you don't say. And what is your best assessment of where we are in terms of solving the library mystery?
Well, an elderly gentleman came over to my table a few days ago while I was having lunch. That wasn't so unusual, but what was the fact that he left an old book on my table and started to walk away.
And then what?
Yeah, then what?
Oh, hi, Jeanette. Well, the man kept on saying, "Why does page 7 in all the books I take out have the 7 underlined in pen? It seems odd." "What?" I said, thinking he might be a bit off his rocker. He showed me, and they did.
Really?
I asked him if he was doing it, and he said no. He wasn't, and showed me one of the new books that he just checked out for the first time. It also had the 7 underlined. That man just kept saying, "Why does page 7 in all the books I have out have the 7 underlined in pen? It still seems odd."
Holmes, you look puzzled.
Indeed I am. I am beginning to understand the real reason why I am not only surprised at what is going on, but I do believe there is far more to this library mystery than meets the eye. Don't you agree, Watson?
I do say. This reminds me so much like our famous case, The Silver Blaze.
Yes, by all means. It most certainly does.
Did I hear you mention The Silver Blaze?
Why, yes, Mrs. Hudson. Why do you ask?
Because I remember that case quite precisely. Horses. Yes, and the number 7.
Mrs. Hudson, I do think the number 7 is becoming the true key to this mystery.
Mr. Wells, nothing could be more clear than the number 7.
I agree, Mrs. Hudson. And since I see Inspector Lestrade walking right towards us, as we all continue to gaze at this row of books here in the library, I shall now focus on exactly what Lestrade says and if he has uncovered additional evidence.
Yes. Most excellent idea, Orson.
So, what does your most mystery-solving mind think?
7. Books. The Enigma Code. All of these elements factor into the library mystery.
Quite true. And there's more to the story.
Something tells me that you and Holmes will be telling us all what everything means.
No, oh, indeed, they will.
Well, well, I am not at all surprised that Helen Thompson, the well-known editor of the Kenosha Gazette, would be here to get the story.
Oh, you are so correct, Mr. Wells. It's been a slow week when it comes to big news stories, so here I am.
Yes, you are, Mrs. Thompson.
Holmes, move the story forward so all of us will know about numbers.
7, yes. 7. This number has a special charisma and significance in astrology. It is a symbol of purity, though other numbers also have their own importance. But number 7 is most auspicious of all.
I have heard about this before. It has something to do with numerology and the mysteries that connect directly to that number.
You are most correct. According to numerology, the people with life path number 7, or the ones who are associated with this number in intuitive, spiritual, or psychic ways, have a kind and lingering influence on others. Also, they have a positive vibe around them and are sensitive and empathetic towards others. They have an extraordinary mind and can see beyond what human senses can perceive.
Yeah, Mr. Holmes. Please allow me to hammer home one other most important element.
Johnny the Hammer Thompson. It's quite interesting that you are joining us right now.
Why is that, Mr. Holmes?
We shall all find that out in a moment or so.
Mr. Holmes, here's what I know about the number 7.
Mr. Thompson, by all means, please tell all of us.
There is a unique and mystical connection between the two. This magic number 7 and the world. The connection of this lucky number will never end with this world. There are seven colors in the rainbow, the seven musical notes in ancient music. And in case you didn't notice, a week has 7 days as well.
But why is this meta-analysis of the number seven so placid important to this library mystery?
Well, as the library director here, I think I might be able to shed some light on this, if I may.
Oh, Mrs. Manchester, may I quote you for the newspaper story?
Oh, why, of course, Helen. You may quote me, as long as you spell my name correctly.
If I may so kindly jump in and once again ask this most delicate question, and that is, why is this meta-analysis of the number seven so blasted important to this library mystery?
The people who keep a hold on this mystical number, seven, in their life are said to be surrounded by positive vibes and are fortunate. Moreover, having an encounter with the number seven, or if one uses it in life, it can have an enormous impact on their lives. This acts as a shield for a person and protects them from bad luck throughout their life.
And how does this relate to this whole story about the library mystery?
There are four major steps we need to follow. These four equate directly to seven. Number one, we need to find all substrings of the given string, create a method for that. Number two, we need to be able to check if two strings are anagrams, and then create a method for that.
Holmes, allow me to add something else.
Oh, why, of course, Lestrade. I would never wish to deny you the opportunity to add rather than subtract.
We also need to count all anagrammatic pairs in a given string, then create the method for that. Combine everything from above and then split the result and therefore create a method for that.
Gentlemen, are we ever going to solve this mystery? Our time appears to be close to ending.
I do agree with you, Miss Hudson.
By the way, the fourth element of the discussion regarding the number seven is we must combine everything from above and split the result. Create a method for that.
So, with all of these most interesting and deep-thinking formulas, the only thing left to be done now is to combine these four steps and split the desired result.
And if I may add this thought to the entire package, these kinds of exercises are very good for making you think algorithmically. My recommendation would be to do the same as I'm trying to do. Train your brain now and then with one of those. And if you can, share.
As the nosy neighbor, as I have been called, why do we have page 7 underlined in all of these books here at the library?
Mrs. O'Neill, that is the quintessential question. Am I correct?
Yes, by all means.
Orson, I do believe that I have the answer to that question about the number 7 and all of the page 7s underlined.
That is most excellent, Holmes. By the way, will Dr. Watson also engage in such conversation?
Yes, we will both be part of the discussion.
And what about me? I've been sitting here waiting to jump in and offer some substance to what you've been discussing.
Mrs. McDermott, I know you have been quite busy planning wrapping up everything after your big nightclub bash for Labor Day this past week.
Yeah, I know about that, but I have some vital information about the number 7.
Yoo-hoo, Watson here. Mrs. McDermott, what about the number 7? Tell me more.
To understand the message behind the number 7 in your life, consider the context in which it appears. Pay attention to your feelings and thoughts when you see the number, and seek guidance from a numerologist or spiritual teacher. Whether you see the number 7 as lucky or unlucky, its significance is deeply rooted in many cultures and is deeply spiritual and symbolic beliefs.
Out of curiosity, Mrs. McDermott, how does your day-to-day life as owner of a nightclub intertwine with 7?
Mr. Holmes, before I laid out lots of money to buy this nightclub here in Kenosha, I worked for the federal government.
Really? Doing what?
Intelligent work for the CIA in Langley, Virginia.
Fascinating. And there must be something else you could share with us, as long as it does not break top secret protocol.
Those books with page 7 underlined. If you actually locate all of the books here in the library with that number underlined, you can determine just what the code language actually translates into.
Yes, that is the response we were looking for.
Orson, I knew it. A 7-character password in lowercase letters could be one of over 8 billion possible permutations.
Yes, Dr. Watson, and a former CIA operative left a most important coded message here in this library.
So, Orson, just what was that coded message?
Well, what could it mean? Was there a secret message spelled out somewhere across the 7th page of all these books? Perhaps the 7th word. What could the message be? A warning? A threat? A great universal truth? A clue to a hidden treasure? A start of a symbol-laden journey across Europe with sinister forces hot on your heels?
Well, no! Calm down, please. As it turns out, there wasn't a secret message or a hunt across Europe or a threat from a diabolical, library-obsessed, crazy person on the loose. There was simply a woman with her own unique code. Apparently, she was underlining page 7 in every book she read in order to keep track of which books she'd already read, in case she comes across it on the shelf again.
I see. There must be a bit more to this story, am I correct? You must know the answer, Inspector Lestrade, correct?
Holmes, you know that I would have the answer, and here it is. That woman not only worked for the CIA, but she also worked for the British Intelligence Unit, MI6, which is the British government agency responsible for the collection, analysis, and appropriate dissemination of foreign intelligence. MI6 is also charged with the conduct of espionage activities outside British territory.
Thank you, Lestrade. Well done.
So there you have it. Lots of sevens to deal with. And yes, after some careful sleuthing by me as the Kane Shadow, I did find some highly classified U.S. government hidden documents in both another Sherlock Holmes novel as well as an Agatha Christie novel.
Well done, Orson. Well done.
Thank you, Holmes. And thanks to all of you for spending time with us for the library mystery.
Good morning. This is Happy Garver once again. By the way, I am speaking as Agatha Christie. Not Sissy, the character I portrayed on the CBS television series Family Affair. It ran from 1966 until 1971 and is still being shown or heard on various platforms we have today. And in case you were wondering, the music you are hearing is the theme from Family Affair, which was composed by veteran television composer Frank Duvall. It has been very much of an honor to appear in this WGTD radio theater broadcast and to become a member of the 91.1 Players. Thanks to all of you. And now, here is executive producer Dr. Stephen Brown to wrap up this morning's broadcast. Steve?
And thank you very much, Kathy Garver. And it's great to have you as a member of the 91.1 Players. And thank you for being our special guest star on your reading as Agatha Christie. Also starring in today's broadcast were Ryan Farrow as Orson Welles, Siegfried Christoph as Sherlock Holmes, Brett Hodek as Dr. Watson, Kathy Zolke as Jeanette, Natalie Lavoie as Mrs. Hudson, Cameron Spencer as Inspector Lestrade, Naomi Wiseland-Zobler as Pauline McDermott, Todd Eaves as Marty Danworth, and also sound engineer number one, Julie Burton as Helen Thompson, Carol Knutson as Eileen O'Neill, Jim McClure as Jerry Yarborough, Shirley Edwards as Barbara Underwood, Mike Vivito as Johnny the Hammer Thompson, and also sound engineer too, and Renee Bouchel as Yvonne Patterson,